Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
go, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
We are here. It's Friday night. This is the Missouri Grassroots Radio Roundtable. Lisa's here in the studio somewhere. She'll be along in just a minute, I'm sure. Von Carriker is going to join us tonight. We'll have a hasty little discussion. I'm sure it'll be quite spirited. We're going to talk about a few things tonight. And I think I see Von now. Hi, Von.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
I can.
Vaughn's in the studio. Again, Lisa's in the studio somewhere. I saw her a bit ago. I don't know where she's at, but she'll be joining us here in a minute. How'd your week go, Vaughn?
Oh, interesting. Domestic disharmony. News of the weird.
You work in domestic disharmony, though, don't you?
Less and less these days, but I typically do. I had a happy ending story. I had a minute to look at the news and be absolutely horrified by some parent's kids.
Oh.
It's just mind-numbing, isn't it, sometimes?
Vaughn's been away for a couple of weeks. She had a family emergency, and she's back with us now. What do you got coming up over there on Show Me Common Sense, Vaughn?
Well, on Show Me Common Sense, we've got Bill Randall's coming up. As you know, he's running for governor. Had a chance to listen to him talk and actually grilled him pretty hard. Wow, I'm impressed. I really am. So I thought, this dude's interesting. We got to get him on the show. So Bill Randall's is coming up on Show Me Common Sense next Tuesday night at 7. I hope people check it out. It's an interesting deal.
Okay, you got a show about pimping children or something coming up.
Yep, this is a show, actually I think the title of it is Why Are You Pimping My Child? Everybody out there who doesn't live under a rock has had to come out of their pocket for some money for a Girl Scout cookie or some wrapping paper or a candle or a coupon book, a frozen pizza, some cookie dough. It's getting out of hand. You've got kids who are in the same family who are competing against each other for a shrinking pool of money, and yet the CEO of the Boy Scouts makes over $1 million a year and rides first class all over the place in a nice plane. I'm just wanting to dig into that some more with some frustrated parents and some people on the other side who are telling us why this is necessary.
Good. That sounds great. There's Lisa. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
How was your week?
Hey, Lisa.
My week was very busy, but, you know, the usual, keeping the plates spinning and trying to not get caught underneath them when they fall.
Yeah, Lisa's here. She's probably among the all of us the most active in the political scene. She's out almost every day to some kind of a meeting or another. What kind of meetings did you go to this week, Lisa?
Well, I wouldn't really call it a meeting, but I had the great pleasure to go see Carvel and Madeline.
Oh, yeah.
Peabody Opera House this Tuesday evening, and it was just hilarious. I had a blast.
Yeah, they're quite a show, aren't they?
It's amazing. I always kind of wondered how that whole dynamic worked. I get it now. It's crazy.
Well,
James Carvel has
sense.
Incredible kind, sense of humor.
Kind of like us here.
Yeah, probably times 10.
I think James Carville and Mary Madeline make a lot of sense, actually. He's kind of like this demented garden gnome, and she's the level-headed, cool side who loses it every once in a while. I think they're awesome together.
You know, I heard someone on the other side say that same thing, except they switched the characters.
Must have been a liberal.
I have a few of them in my life, don't you?
Uh-huh. Oh, gosh, yeah. If I didn't have liberals in my life, I wouldn't know what I was fighting about half the time.
Aside from attending meetings and aside from pinning Homeschool United and aside from writing for the St. Louis
Political Buzz Examiner,
Lisa does a show on Wednesday nights called The Culture Vigilante. What you got coming up there, Lisa?
Well, I too have Bill Randall on Wednesday evening.
Cool.
And Dave, I think, also will have Bill Randall's coming up very, very soon. Bill is very available. The other gubernatorial candidates are a little bit less available. We're trying to ferret them out of the weeds and get them to come on as well, but we're working on that.
Well, yeah, you know what? I started with this plan, you'll remember, where we were going to talk to every candidate in a Missouri primary. And what I found out, and this is echoing what you said, Lisa, is after the first couple of weeks, the only people who would come talk to us is the people who we would be supportive of anyway. The rest of them wouldn't come talk to us. And listen, we were fair. Don't you think we were fair, Lisa?
Oh, I think more than fair. Especially the format that you presented, Dave. You were very upfront with your questioning. All of the candidates received their questioning beforehand. The format was laid out, you know, on an equal ground. On
they all got they all got exactly the same questions. But you know, I can see why. Quite frankly, a person like Sarah Steelman wouldn't want to come and talk to a bunch of Tea Party activists.
Well, isn't that an assumption it's making?
I think they need to. I think, especially this election cycle, like no other, they're going to have to get that crossover vote. All of them.
Absolutely.
They're going to have to appeal to that, and the grassroots is no longer a movement to be dismissed. They need to gain the favor of the grassroots, at least on some level, if they stand a chance of advancing to the next round. So I don't really understand.
I want to jump in and stress this again, because that really bothers me when they talk about dismissing a bunch of Tea Party activists, because I hear that sometimes. And you know, I do like my local Tea Party, but I would not ever describe every single person who comes to a Tea Party meeting as a Tea Party activist. And I think that's what the Sarah Steelmans and the Joanne Emersons of the world are missing. There are liberals in that group. There are conservatives. There are libertarians. There are atheists. There are Christians. There are teachers. There are dads and moms. There are all kinds of people who come to the local Tea Party meetings, and they all happen to have been drawn together by the same things that have frustrated conservatives for years, which
yes.
is disenfranchisement. And I think if they ignore that, they will do it at their peril.
And it's not
I also think that it's not just conservatives. I think it's the liberals as well. I think that they are frustrated with their party, as just as we are frustrated with our party, and that everyone is looking for some kind of an alternative, and you know, some kind of reason to be put back into the political arena.
I really think probably the biggest loss to Barack Obama came this week. I mean, in his own liberal party, where they have the same 9.8% real unemployment that we have on this side of the aisle, and he's out there saying that everyone who's holding down a job illegally can stay here forever.
Oh, I don't want to be hateful, and I don't think this is hateful at all. But when I think about the 80s and 90s, when Haitians couldn't get into this country, when they were fleeing oppression and just horrific conditions, and we were letting Europeans in left and right and Canadians in left and right and famous people in left and right, and when I look at what's going on now, and they're talking about making illegal immigrants citizens by default without actually ever having gone through the process, it makes me feel a little bit angry because it's not fair. It's not fair to the people who tried very hard to get here from other countries. It's not fair to the people who studied, who worked, who followed the law, who did everything they were supposed to do to get here. Illegal immigrants may be here and they may be working here, but they're not paying taxes like I am. They're not paying taxes like the people who came here legally are. They're not contributing in the same way. And I'm sorry, how do you get into a college, a state college, as an illegal immigrant? I literally, I don't even understand how that works. I had to bust my gut to get into college. It wasn't even guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. And to get into the state college, you had to be a citizen of that state, or pay an exorbitant amount of money.
And I'm looking here at the news of California. Their state colleges are, I mean, you know, UC Davis, UC San Francisco, UC whatever, UCLA. Their state colleges are in so much financial trouble right now that they have. They're trying to come up with a way to kick everyone off their six-figure pensions, and they're also finding a way to raise the tuition and court out-of-state students. They want the students coming in from other states because they can charge them 10 times as much in tuition. They're trying to make up budget shortfalls. It's amazing to me how they twist themselves in the knots in California to make things even worse than what they are.
Well, it's all about getting those illegals to vote, you know. I mean, if you can get them to vote, if you can put another 4.5 million people on the government dole and make them dependent on the government, you can run the country forever.
Well, that's the same way with welfare. There's some expectation that if you put enough people on welfare, regardless of whether they're illegal, you can actually cull enough votes from them to make it all worthwhile.
That's right.
I don't like to get into national politics too much, but I think we ought to all just fess up. Those who voted for Barack Obama, we know, and you know. And you know that we know that you voted for him because he was black.
Yeah. Okay. On the Hour of Truth coming up, friends, I have Monday night. We're going to talk to Cynthia Davis. I'm really looking forward to that. Cynthia is funny and pointed. I don't
know
if
she's honest.
She is very honest. And on Thursday we got John Robinson from down in your area, ladies.
That's right. He just got the endorsement from Missouri Right to Life. Is that correct?
I've heard that.
I woke up one morning and he was on the radio talking about that. That is a huge, huge deal.
Monday the 2nd, we've got Bill Randles. And then Monday the 9th is going to be a very fun show. If everybody wants to listen, Lloyd Thomas Sloan comes along, and he has a book coming out where he talks about James Madison proposed some time ago, and we'll go into the whole history of it. I'm just brushing the surface because that's all I know of it. But James Madison proposed either as part of the original 14 that were proposed, of 10 of which got taken, or shortly thereafter, an amendment to the Constitution that would say that a given number of states could repeal any federal law. So anything passed by the Congress, a certain number of states could get together and do a vote just like they would for an amendment, and they could repeal that law.
Are we talking about
cool.
Dave?
Talking about what?
Are we talking Con?
No. Like the Congress passes a law, let's say, just hypothetically, that everybody has to buy insurance. Okay? If 26 states representing more than half of the population voted so, that law would cease to be. So it's not a con. No, it is This is an amendment to the Constitution that would make it like it was intended, where the states could repeal any federal law that they didn't like.
Hey, Dave.
Yes.
I'm getting some serious, like, reverb on this. Are you hearing that, too? I have an echo.
Do you? Do you still have
and
it?
So, that's better.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was hearing it, too, and I thought it might just be me.
No, I'm hearing it again.
Is it
yeah.
me?
Yeah. It is. I muted you, and it went right away. Do you have?
Okay, I'll turn it off and dial in again.
Okay, thanks. Lloyd Sloan is going to talk about that with us for a while, and he knows the ins and outs of that. I mean, you need to catch that show. Listen, folks, it's 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Please get involved here. This free speech night, you call in, and we'll talk about what you want to talk about along with what we're going to talk about. We're going to hit on some touchy topics tonight. We're going to talk about Claire a little bit. We're going to talk about Claire a little bit, and we're going to talk about the Prez a little bit. But there's some lineup coming, and I think, is that you, Lisa?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's great. Great. Okay, I want to listen to this. I played this on my show maybe Thursday night and ranted about it for a while, and I just still can't believe it. I know you've all heard it, but we're going to talk about it for a minute.
Just one more. I just want to know if the Senate's going to pass a budget anytime soon.
The Senate passed the budget last August. In fact, we did better. I've always complained about the way we did these budget resolutions because they're phony baloney. Every year we pass a resolution and it doesn't even have force of law. And the appropriators would have just completely ignored it. So last August, for the first time that I've been there, we put it into law for 2 years, the budget for 2 years, and actually 10 years going forward, but legal spending caps for 2 years. And guess what happened this year? The appropriators followed it. For the first time since I've been there. So them telling, this is Fox News and a talking point by the political right, that we haven't passed a budget. We not only passed one, for the first time it's in law, signed by the president, and we must follow it, and it is bringing down spending, and it is bringing down the number of federal employees.
Just one more. I just want to know if the Senate's going to pass a budget.
Okay. That, in case you didn't recognize the sultry feminine voice, was Claire McCaskill. And it seems to me, I've listened to this 100 times, and I get the same impression every time I listen to it, but it seems to me that unbeknownst to anyone else except her and President Obama, those two passed a budget, and the president signed it into law last August.
Oh, okay.
Did you hear that? She said last August they passed a budget, the president signed it into law, that it reduces federal spending, and that it reduces the number of federal employees. Now,
I thought they were reducing the number of federal employees on their own because the economy was so horrible.
Actually, they've increased the number of federal employees.
Well, then the Wall Street Journal, no, the Washington Post must have it wrong, because I think I was reading an article just last week where they talked about how hard times are finally hitting the Beltway.
Well, the Washington Post is printing what Barack Obama told them to print. The fact of the matter is that the number of direct federal employees is up 2% this year. Now, you got to look beyond that, though, because the number of people who work for the federal government is up almost 20%, and that is people who get a paycheck as a result of the federal government. Those are people working on these bridge jobs. Those are people that's the extra money that the Fed has pumped out into places for more police officers, and the president is asking for another stimulus, by the way, so that he can hire more police officers and more teachers.
How's that going to help all these guys in my neck of the woods who do construction for a living?
Well, I mean,
what are we going to do? Teach them into wealth? I don't understand how that's working.
It's not working. It's not working. It hasn't worked, and it won't work. But I'm going to sidetrack here. You know, I have contended myself for years now. Ron Paul, great guy. I love his constitutional principles. I love that he's a principled man. But the man ran on this platform. I am going to cut $1 trillion the first year. You cannot cut $1 trillion when you already have 9.8% unemployment. You just can't do it. You are going to unemploy another 2 million people the day you cut $1 trillion.
Right.
So
now my understanding from talking to Bill Randles probably a week or so ago was that every dollar that we take in through taxes is now used to pay for Medicaid, Medicare, and entitlement programs, welfare, actually. Everything else we are borrowing. We're borrowing money to keep the government running in the first place. Every dime of employee salaries at the federal level, every dime that we send to the states through grants or what have you, we're borrowing that money because we can't afford to support ourselves.
Over a third of the workforce is government employee. So if you cut, you're right, if you cut that part of the workforce, there'd be a lot of unemployed people for a while. But then the private sector will take over and absorb those jobs as long as you eliminate the regulation.
How's the private sector going to absorb those jobs, actually? And
well,
maybe
to eliminate the regulation and allow the private sector to thrive. Right now, we've choked our private sector off and regulated it to death, where they can't move or hire or do anything or expand anything they want to do.
But they can't.
Well, that's absolutely right, and this is, aside from deregulation, this is, in my opinion, the best bullet for the fair tax. You know, you cannot cut government spending. We're in a trap here, folks. You can't cut government spending until you have something in place that is going to grow the private sector economy at least the same rate that you are shrinking the public economy.
Now, a lot of people don't understand what the fair tax is or how it works because it is a little bit complicated.
We got John here from Ohio. He's got to say, hey, John, you're on the air.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi, John from Ohio. Where at in Ohio, John?
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. All right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry about your Reds last year.
You sound sorry about that, too, dude.
Okay. What you got, John?
Well, if you don't mind me asking, who do you guys support for the presidential election before I start asking questions and stuff?
We're grassroots conservatives. Who do you think?
Romney?
Yeah.
All right. Well, basically, what's happening is, did you know Mr. Romney, when he was governor of Massachusetts, it was 47th in job creation? So how is that going to stand
Do you know that when Romney became governor of Massachusetts, they were dead last 50th in job creation?
Dave, I don't think it's a good idea to interrupt him. I know he was going to wrap up, and I'd like to hear it.
I'm sorry, John. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I love Romney. I really do. I mean, I think he's obviously, of course, better than Mr. Obama, but that just confuses me, and how Obama is attacking him on TV with the ads about that fact, and how that's what I was getting to. It was 50th in job creation when he started, but he brought it back down to 47th, and what did they expect him to do, bring it to first?
Oh, you're absolutely right, John, and I'm sorry I interrupted you there.
Oh, no problem.
Exactly. Go ahead, Vaughn.
I don't think that you can call Barack Obama the jobs-creating president. I think that, you know, checking some of the news stories and seeing how some of the people who've always been in his camp have reacted negatively to his last speech encouraging us to hire more teachers and firemen to get the economy back on track. And I don't think that anyone is going to say that Barack Obama created jobs in his 4 years as president, his 3 years plus.
Barack Obama said that. His newest ad says flat out, I created 4.6 million jobs in the last 27 months.
Yes, but how many did he lose? And I think that Barack Obama and the people close to him are the only people who actually believe that number.
Well, I hope you're right. You know, we're coming, if we are in fact turning the tide, if we are in fact coming out of our deep sleep, then you're right. If we're not, then we have a multitude of Americans who just listen to that commercial and go, oh, wow, what a great guy.
So let's interject into the conversation. The government doesn't create jobs. It's not the government's job on a state or a federal level to create jobs.
Absolutely.
John, would you agree?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Most definitely.
So what do you think, John, of the idea of these guys campaigning on job creation?
Well, you know, this is the thing. With so many people out there that are uneducated about politics in general, they'll take this stuff and they'll instantly believe it. Like, if I went out and told people, you know, Romney's a job killer or Obama's a job creator, which both are lies, they'd believe it because they don't know any different. They don't know that it's not the government's job to create jobs, like you said, on a state or federal level.
And like Vaughn said, and I hope you're wrong, I hope the tide is turning. I feel it turning, but we have to consider the fact that I move in a pretty closed circle of people who look at these things and know them to be lies. So I don't get, I don't get outside my closed circle very much to be able to say that as a whole, American people are waking up. But that's why I played the McCaskill ad, where McCaskill says, we passed a budget in August. I mean, this woman can't possibly be standing up there lying intentionally. She has to absolutely be a moron who believes, who has been so asleep in the Senate, she believes this, because she's got to know that 92% of the people in this country know that's a bold-faced lie.
Claire is very shrewd. She knows exactly what she's saying, and she is very shrewd, and she's been very good about toeing the party line. She's been joined at the hip with Obama since the very beginning. And actually, the grassroots is doing their very best to tie her to Obama to help defeat her in the election in November. But
right.
I think Claire knows exactly what she's saying. She's trying to help Obama and the Democrats paint this picture of, you know, entitlement and job creation and nanny state that a lot of Americans have bought into over the generations of conditioning.
Right.
have Americans to buy into that idea. And
now,
Claire absolutely knows her target audience.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I just had a question as well. Are you two against banning gay marriage on a federal level, as Romney has said he wants to do?
Well, we'll take turns on that one, Lisa.
You know, Here's how I feel about this whole marriage issue. This whole gay marriage issue is a red herring, because the people that are worried about the health of traditional marriage don't need to worry about gay marriage interfering with it. They need to worry about the family courts and the culture having the traditional marriage being undermined that way. This whole gay marriage has absolutely nothing to do with undermining traditional marriage. And I don't think that the government should have anything to do with gay marriage or traditional marriage, either one. I think that since the infusion of government into that institution, I think it has declined dramatically. So I think if they got out of it, like everything else, the institution would be a lot healthier.
Hot potato, Vaughn.
No, I don't think so. Look, here's the deal. It's not our business.
Right.
I am not one to sit there and tell someone who obeys the law, pays taxes, works like I do, and does their part that I am the final arbiter of what I think is right or not right in their personal life. I don't want anybody coming over to my...
Since you're a Republican, you believe gay marriage is wrong, Fuck Republicans. Fuck Christians. Fuck Republicans. Fuck them. Fuck them.
I feel bad about that. If John had stayed on the line before he started cursing, I would have told him I'm not a Republican.
I'm not a Republican either. What an idiot.
he's emotional about it, and people do get emotional about these things. I'm not going to get emotional about something that's not going to affect the way I live my life, and that's really not what this election year is about. This election is about whether or not you'll be able to get up and pay your bills 4 years from now when they're
exactly
right. Done with this government.
That's exactly right. And all the people on our side, and I had this discussion with someone for a long, long, long time, a discussion that lasted the majority of this past week. Those people on our side who are just bashing Romney still don't get it. I mean, this isn't it's not some party loyalty. It's not compromising on my principles. It's nothing like that that says I'm going to go out and cast the vote. You know, none of us were in love with Romney when this thing started, but we're going to cast the vote because my principle is we have a tyrant running our country who, given four more years, will put us in our graves. That's my principle.
I think we are teetering on the edge of economic chaos, economic apocalypse even, because
absolutely.
We don't have money.
Yep. Yep.
I look at what's going on in Europe with Greece, who spent themselves into a near coma, with Italy and Spain, with Portugal, with Ireland, where the citizens are still paying for the mistakes of their government, and which one was it, Finland? I can't remember. But we've already gotten 15 banks in the world downgraded just this week.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Finland, right.
These are the issues that we have, because we are now such an interconnected planet, the issues that we have with all of these other things, gay marriage, bad families, all this other stuff, they're important, but really – when you are reduced to a second world or third world country because of your hideous financial policies, you're not going to be worrying so much about those things anymore. And I think
right.
we're teetering on the verge of becoming a second world power.
I agree. I agree with Lisa, too. You know, the threat to traditional marriage is MTV, a 51% divorce rate, the family courts, I absolutely agree with that. Now, as a libertarian, I've got to weigh in on this question of John's before he...
He's angry at Republicans, and many people are.
Yeah, before he went totally psychedelic. But I don't believe the federal government has any business in it. If a state wants to take issue with something like that, I believe that's their constitutional right, but I don't, you know me, I don't believe the federal government should be licensing my marriage. I don't think the federal government or any government should be condoning or uncondoning my own marriage, my own heterosexual marriage. I don't believe that, for that matter, I don't believe the government ought to be licensing my doctor, but that's me.
Well, traditionally, it's always been a function of your religion or your society, and I think that back when it was, things were going a whole lot better. I think that when the government interfered and developed the great society and developed welfare, I talked about this on a previous show on Show Me Common Sense, they really did one thing exceptionally well, which was destroy nuclear families. And because of that, you have a situation where it's obvious. Anyone can look at that situation and say, hey, the government doesn't really do things very well. Because if you don't think there's any proof of that, look no further than the welfare system, the breakdown of the nuclear family, the terrible education system that we have that leads us to sloping foreheads like, for instance, these kids on the bus belittling this poor grandma.
Right.
It's not the courts are struggling to deal with bad families, bad parents, and bad parents are the result of bad parenting, but if society is broken down because the government contributed to the breakdown of it, you got to go back and say, hey, we should stop doing that. That's not been working.
What we need is a culture vigilante.
Yes, we need a culture vigilante. Where or where can we find one?
Find one everywhere. Tonight at 7 o'clock right here on Missouri Grassroots Radio.
There you go. Okay, now this one here, this clip, 30 seconds, bear with me.
Okay,
well, I am just absolutely amazed that we have not heard this clip every night in primetime TV.
The problem is that the way Bush has done it over the last 8 years is to take out a credit card from the Bank of China in the name of our children, driving up our national debt from $5 trillion for the first 42 presidents. Number 43 added $4 trillion by his lonesome, so that we now have over $9 trillion of debt that we are going to have to pay back. $30,000 for every man, woman, and child. That's irresponsible. It's unpatriotic.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, and I was surprised. I think that he's been exceptionally quiet about that lately. Am I wrong?
Why have we been? I mean, that's what amazes me. I mean, we have four or five huge PACs out there on our side putting out ads that I see every night on the TV. We have a heated campaign coming up. I mean, why aren't we playing this clip every night?
I think that number went up to 48,000 since,
Right. I've got the national debt clock here right in front of me. Right now, you and I and your great-grandchildren owe $50,365 each.
Well, way to put away the credit card, Barack.
The current debt that George Bush unpatriotically, and I agree with Barack there, added $4 trillion to and brought up to $9 trillion, is now $15 trillion 8.
Wow.
We can print more money. That's not a problem.
Well, yeah, let's just print it up. It'll make great wallpaper.
Interesting.
There you go.
The Federal
Reserve. We have Melanie on the line. She wants to make a comment about education and the economy.
Oh, good.
Hi, Melanie, welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. What do you want to say? Hey, Melanie, call back. Either we have a bad connection or something went wrong with the audio there. So give us a call back if you want to make a comment.
So anyway, that's where we were at. $50,000 each.
I think that some media outlets have been slapping him around about the hypocrisy of it all, but not really all that much. And of course, he can't hear them because he's in Hollywood campaigning at, $40,000 a plate dinners.
Right. Have you seen the ad where Jennifer Love Hewitt is having him over for dinner?
No.
Oh, man, it's great. Jennifer Love Hewitt. Barack's going to her house for dinner, and you can enter a contest to be a guest at her house to have dinner with her and Barack.
I think I'd be bored to tears. I mean, no offense, but Jennifer Love Hewitt, what does she bring to the table? I mean, you got a bland president who says nothing but platitudes and repeats himself, and you can just smell, and you can actually see it. It's like hot, wavy desert highway lines of self-satisfaction wafting from the top of his head. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
He is, I mean, with this and the Alec Baldwin thing, he is unashamedly going after the American Idol crowd, those people who sit on the couch and believe everything they see in a political ad.
Trolls.
Yeah.
See, we're technically trolls. No, we're not. We are troll-ish, but we can't beat actual trolls because we put our names on everything we say and do.
Right.
So we're actually just a little too brave to qualify as trolls, which is weird.
Okay, it's time for a break, folks. We've got 20 minutes.
We'll get Melanie on the other side of the break. Melanie's back with us. We'll get her on
Melanie's
the other side
back
of the
break. With us. Do her now. Do her now. We don't have to do the break now.
All right. Hi, Melanie. Sorry about that. What did you want to say?
Hi. Fuck you, stupid-ass niggers.
Oh. Hi, Melanie.
He's gone.
Melanie's
love you,
gone.
Too.
So.
Oh, I love the Melanies of the world, and I appreciate them because at least we know who they, you know, at least we know where they stand.
Well, yeah, and they make us look pretty darn good.
Yeah. Thanks, Melanie.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Okay, there we go. We've spent a little bit of time tonight showing the liberal left for exactly what it is. Thank you very much, Melanie and John.
I don't think John was a liberal.
Well, somebody got a hold of his phone then while we were. Okay, we're going to go ahead and take that break now, and we'll be back in a few seconds.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
With the August primary looming in about 7 weeks, we find the time is running out on who we vote for. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Do the representatives we send to Jefferson City really care what you think, or do they do the bidding of the special interest groups and lobbyists? It's your choice. You can elect a true citizen legislator or an establishment politician who takes his marching orders from the party elitists and his donors. Either way, time is running out for our state and country. Hear the clock of freedom ticking? I'm Terry Varner, and I approve this message. I've got a feeling that the tide is
turning. Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death!
Okay, we're back. Lisa's here. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Dave.
Vaughn's here. Hi, Vaughn.
Hey there.
And this is Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Friday night free speech hour, and we've had some free speech tonight.
I love free speech.
I love free speech myself. I love free speech myself. We had
free speech is allowed to be stupid.
Yeah.
A little bit vulgar. Nice. Yes.
I had a long conversation with another liberal today about whether or not health care was a right. And this is, I think, one of the hardest things, really, to get people to understand that your good health is not a right. Rights, in my book, and I want you both to weigh in on this, because it's kind of gray, I guess, whether, you know, clean air is a right, clean water is a right. Rights, in my book, are things you are born with. You are born with life, for example, so you have a right to life. You're not necessarily born with any particular health. And you are not guaranteed, whether you want to say by your creator or by nature, any number of years of life or any guarantee of health. And so in my book, that makes health a commodity.
Hey, Dave.
Yes.
We've got Charles Malone on who called to talk about that very thing.
Okay, Charles. Charles?
Hello?
Hello, Charles.
I love that. I feel
the moon must be full.
Yeah, full moon night on free speech night. Okay, Hey,
I've almost done free speech night a couple of times. Is this what typically happens?
This has never happened before, but you know, we're becoming quite popular now. 1,285 listeners. We may not be the biggest, but we are probably the fastest growing, or right up there near it. Yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen when you become popular. And we don't have, I mean, this is internet radio, so we're not in any trouble because of John and Melanie and Charlie, probably, who are all the same person.
They're the same person.
Yeah.
No, but I think Melanie and John and Charlie are.
Okay. But also, we don't have the time delay that, you know, Sean Hannity and Mark Levin have. So they're going to get on the air, and they're going to get their time, and that's okay. It's free speech, and we don't mind, and we appreciate them, again, making us look good. So back to this rights thing. Lisa, take a weigh in on that. What's a right, and why isn't health care a right?
Because your rights end where they start infringing on my liberties. And, you know, it is not my responsibility to pay for everybody else's health care. You know, it's my responsibility to take care of myself and not to be a burden on society. And health care is not a right. And it goes back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier in the program. We've had generations upon generations conditioned to believe that they're entitled. And,
yeah,
you know, the entitlements have been creeping into the culture little by little for decades and decades. And, you know, it starts out with one thing, and then it ends up with something else, and it's a slippery slope, and now we have Obamacare. We really need to start putting out into the atmosphere, you know, the ideas, the way the liberals did. We ought to take a lesson from the liberal playbook and start pushing back exactly the way the liberals have, and just start saying, you know, what is the truth? You know, you do not have a right to health care. You do not have a right to all of these entitlement programs. They are a drain and a burden on society at large. You know, you can reasonably expect from a civilized culture a hand up and not a hand out. But we need to start changing the way people think, and we need to start talking about it and putting it out in the atmosphere so that people can absorb it.
Now, Lisa, let me ask you something. What's the difference between that and, say, paying outrageous prices for health care because a lot of unhealthy people are being tossed into a group with a lot of people who are perfectly healthy in order to spread the risk in private insurance?
Well, okay, I think it goes back again to, you know, government does not have a role in this. Government has regulated this health care system to where they've taken anything remotely competitive out of it, and if it was truly a free market issue and healthcare initiatives were free market and competitive driven private industry, it would be a different story. People would have the freedom to shop and drive those prices down. Healthcare across the board is too expensive because of the bureaucracy that has grown up through the government regulation and everything that goes along with it. So, Did I answer your question?
I think so, but let me ask you this. Why don't we have health insurance pools for people who smoke and health insurance pools for people with, say, prostate cancer or skin cancer? Maybe not so much prostate cancer because no one really knows what causes that, I think. But let's say you have kidney disease and you are a heavy drinker. What about a health care pool, an insurance just for people with kidney disease? Would that have any sort of effect on the market?
You know, I think that if all health care was market-driven, people with chronic illnesses would still be able, you know, I mean, obviously you would be buying your insurance along the way or not, based on your own decisions. I still think a private market would solve that problem.
Well, what I'm saying is, what if I like ice cream and I weigh 250 pounds and I won't stop eating ice cream and Big Macs? And do I have some expectation that my premium should be lower because I want and expect to be put into a pool with a lot of people who work out all the time and eat tofu and green veggies?
I wouldn't think so. Why isn't it your responsibility if you make a choice to eat ice cream and Big Macs?
Well, I mean,
it is it is your body, but I shouldn't have to pay for it.
I think part of the reason, I guess I'm just clowning around here, is that the health insurance companies probably realize that nobody's going to buy that insurance. You know, there's no health insurance pool for healthy people. The best they can do is give them the lowest premiums. But if you're doing stuff to make yourself unhealthy and your hospital bills down the line are going to be ridiculous, I think health insurance companies want to mix you in with you know, the healthy population because they want to minimize the financial loss that they're going to have. Now, the question,
when health care insurance started, health care was a catastrophic thing. People bought catastrophic insurance, and they paid for everything else out of pocket. And think about what kind of world we would be living in if we had that kind of an issue. Wouldn't you not maybe eat that second Big Mac at dinner if you only had catastrophic insurance and you were going to the doctor and paying for that out of pocket?
Not only that, but you would stop going to the doctor for a cold and a hangnail.
Right.
You know, and you would, and when you had to go to the doctor because this cold didn't go away in 3 weeks and you were feeling miserable, you would shop for the doctor that would see you for $20.
Absolutely. So the system has been overused in so many levels. It became a moneymaker on many levels, and it's just been abused.
Insurance as it exists. In the free market should exist in an ideal world to keep you from losing your house if you get cancer.
But you know, we're required by law to buy insurance if we drive a car. We're required by law to have insurance if we engage in a dangerous profession, I guess.
Right.
You know, there are certain instances where we are required by law to purchase things, and I know that the individual mandate is what's really up in play here at the Supreme Court, forcing healthy people to buy something they don't need.
And while I say myself, because I'm a libertarian, I think it's ridiculous that we're required by law to buy insurance for anything. We are required to buy insurance if we make a personal choice to drive a car. We are required to buy insurance if we make a personal choice to drive a race car or to ride a racehorse or to bungee jump off a cliff. We should not be required by any law to buy any product simply because we're alive.
Good point.
We made no choice to be alive.
You know what? You're talking about choice, and that just raised an issue. We talked earlier this week through email, and I can't remember the name of the bill, the one that's on the governor's desk, and he may have signed it by now, that requires telecom companies to give up the location of someone if the police say this person is called for help and needs help. Did that get signed into law yet?
I haven't followed.
It did not yet. I mean, it will. The governor has already indicated that he would sign it.
It will.
Yeah.
And I was wondering about the issue of choice, because I know we had some lively debate over that this week. And it seems to me that this is a situation where the telecommunications company really has no choice. And I wonder how they're going to avoid maybe getting sued if, for instance, someone prank calls the cops and the cops go to them and say, we need this number. Give it to us. It's an emergency. And that immunity that was built into that law is probably the only protection they have. But, you know, knowing people, I doubt it'll stop someone from trying it.
Yeah, but the person who makes the choice to make a prank call is going to lose in court. I mean, that's what I'm all about. I'm all about let it go to court. Let it go to court, and it would be great somewhere down the road if we have some tort reform where the person who takes this to court gets to pay all the court costs if he loses. Vaughn, is it not true that in the case of a frivolous lawsuit, they can actually make that assignment?
That's like the chupacabra, to be honest.
Yeah.
I've read about that happening maybe once or twice in my life, and I don't even think it's been in this state. And truthfully, you do the fighting, everybody limps away, pays their legal fees, and calls it a day in one of those situations where there might be a frivolous suit. Lawyers are reluctant to even file claims against file complaints against each other with the ethics committee because it's kind of a fraternity.
Yeah.
So I doubt that many lawyers, even with someone who is despicable in court that way, who file a frivolous suit, I doubt many lawyers would go after that person.
But yeah, you know, and you can remember from the debate we had on this week that my now Lisa is opposed. Go ahead and tell us what your opposition to that is, Lisa.
I think it takes away the choice. And Bob, didn't you say something in our debate that there was already a presumption within that protected those people to begin with? So why do we need legislation to give them additional protection, which was an answer I don't know that I ever got during the course of our debate this week?
Oh, okay. What you were talking about, my presumption was that someone who's calling for help is asking for all the help they can get. And why would the telecommunications company need immunity? And what I was saying there is that the telecommunications company probably doesn't have the ability to determine whether or not something's a real emergency. And truthfully, you don't want to be known as the company that's giving up information when people call and ask for it, even if those people are the police. They need that sort of protection so that they can stay in business, because if they're going to be required to turn over confidential information and they can't independently verify it, they would typically get sued for revealing information based on some hunch or some tip that they couldn't independently verify. I think that was the answer to the question.
What you were trying to say, because I thought, and I obviously misunderstood, correct me, I thought that you said that there was presumption of imminent danger anyway if the police were going after that information, so that they were immune. With that they had immunity with that presumption. Is that incorrect? Did I misunderstand that?
I think it starts with the call that's made to the law enforcement officer. If someone calls 911 because they're in grave danger, the presumption is when they're calling for help, if you try to help them, there should be some sort of immunity for you if it doesn't turn out well. Now, in this case, I think with that bill, they're talking about people presumably calling them for help because they actually need it, in which case the person who's most likely to be able to tell that is the responding officer, the first responder. Now, some telecom guy, some customer service rep sitting at their desk in a faraway state who gets that call from an officer is going to have to rely on that officer that his information or her information is correct and that they're doing the right thing. And if they can't rely on the officer and they still have to follow the law, you know, they're going to get sued. So I think the immunity in that case is probably a good thing. I'm sorry?
It kind of sounds like the law is muddying it up, because if the presumption is there and that presumption gives them immunity in the first place, then it sounds like the extra legislation is kind of muddying the waters. I know I'm misunderstanding.
I would tend to disagree. I think the extra legislation protects the one group who can't independently verify the accuracy of the call for help.
Okay. And then I guess to answer Dave's question, I did have an issue with this legislation because anybody has a choice. You can sign a contract with your carrier to allow them to give out this information or not. Or, I mean, and it's not like they're not tracking you anyway. You can drive through St. Charles County and they can ping you. They put up towers, you know, about a year ago where they passed a resolution for St. Louis County. So, I mean, they are getting the information. They know how to find you. It's just, you know, it's kind of a Big Brother thing in my mind. It's taking away your choice. I can turn that issue off on my iPhone and have somebody find me or not at my will.
Right.
I can decide at my will if I want to be able to have somebody find me if I'm in danger. And I just kind of think that takes the choice away from the individual. That was my issue with the whole deal.
Well, I think the individual makes that choice when they make the call.
Okay. That's it, folks. We're out of time. Look, on Monday night, we're going to talk with Cynthia Davis. On Tuesday night, Vaughn is going to talk to you about why someone's pimping your kid.
Nope, Bill Randles.
Oh, Bill Randles is this Monday?
Yep, Tuesday.
This Tuesday, my bad. Okay. So Vaughn's going to talk with Bill Randles on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Lisa is going to talk with – you've got quite a lineup there, Lisa. Run that by me.
Bill Randles again.
Right.
And Bill Phelps from Fairtax and Liz Trent.
Okay. On Thursday, I'm going to talk with – oh, John Robinson. And on Friday of next week, we have a very good roundtable. I hope Lisa and Vaughn can both come back. Mike Smith is going to be here at least, and maybe one other person, and we're going to talk about the fair tax. So that is Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Good night, Vaughn.
Good night, Dave. Good night, Lisa.
Good night, Vaughn.
Good night, Lisa.
Good night, Dave. Good night,
good night.
John Boy.
Good night, John Boy. And here is my favorite, Kate Smith. God bless you all.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.